He is one of South Africa's top labor lawyers. He's a politician and member of parliament. And now you can access Michael Bagrum as he talks law and life on High FM. Join Michael Bagrum at 6 p.m. for Bagrum on Law and Life. 101.9 High FM. 101.9 megahertz of life and law.
Hi, thank you for joining me this evening. It's Michael Bagrum every Tuesday evening between 6 and 7. We have always a joyful program, interesting guests, interesting information, and I always introduce you to the guest and give you a background to the individual, and let's know who they are, let's find out where they're working, what they're doing, and what they're contributing to society. Please, if you have any comments, let me have them. If you want to send a WhatsApp to the station, please do, High FM. Please let us know and let us know what guests you'd like to hear from. I'm quite convincing in that I'm able to bring in guests of all sorts and sizes. So I'm looking forward to this evening, but like I do every Tuesday evening between 6 and 7, I introduce you to a book that I've been looking at, and I took a book off my bookshelf about 2 weeks ago, and I've been delving through it. And I'll tell you why it was interesting and why I thought it was worthwhile another look at it, another read. It's a book called Seeking Mandela. It was about 20 years ago that it was brought out by Heribert Adam, who was a well-known person in our political spheres and sociology in South Africa. Yes, it was printed in 2005. So, yeah, 20 years ago. And, of course, not only Heribert Adam, but he was working with Kokila Moodley. Both of them had a look at the South African situation at the time, a little bit of history, Mandela coming in and the solutions that we had in the time, and to seek if they could somehow use that experiment to help a little bit with the impasse in Israel. And it's fascinating to read it now, in terms of where we are at the moment and in terms of how South Africa has effectively completely destroyed any ability to intervene in any way whatsoever. So it's actually a worthwhile read, really looking at the past, but also looking at where they can move into the future. And basically it shows how this government, and in particular the current government, has basically destroyed any ability for South Africa of any nature to try and look at the problematic Israel-South African analogy. There is no analogy that exists any longer. But worthwhile reading, worthwhile looking at it, worthwhile understanding how they looked at it from the two-state solution. So again, it's called Seeking Mandela, Peacemaking Between Israelis and Palestinians by Heribert Adam, Kokila Moodley. Really worthwhile read. It'll make you cry, make you laugh. It'll also make you think as to how we've actually basically destroyed our ability to even be an iota of truth and help in the situation. So this evening, I go back to my guest this evening. I will introduce him. He'll tell us a bit about himself. He'll tell us a bit about the businesses that he's involved in. It's Leon Singer, Leon Stephen Singer, who was, in fact, in class with me at Hertzler School, in primary school. He was born in 57. He's a graduate of both the universities of Cape Town and Wits. He did a Bachelor of Social Science at Cape Town University, UCT. And at Wits, he went to the Wits School of Business Administration, where he did postgraduate in human resources. And, of course, that's where I find myself in my whole career in human resources, and he'll tell us a little bit about his involvement in Leon had involved himself in his business as obviously giving direction with human resources. He's a director and owner of the Singer Group, which is a family business. I remember the beginning of the Singer Group right in the early days. And in fact, Leon, I remember your dad so vividly because my first three trips, in fact, to Israel while I was a student were booked by your dad through embassy travel. I have such fond memories of it because not only did he help me with the booking and getting it all right, but he managed to also find a hotel for me and restaurants. He was quite a character and a lovable man completely. He'll tell us a little bit about the history between the embassy travel and Israel. And of course, it's still a business that's going on today. I know you've been involved with the group now in excess of 40 years, and you've been at the forefront of the growth and development of that Singer Group. I know that you're involved in the group with both your sister and your brother, and it basically is very strongly a family business. I know you do the administration, the financial planning and development, and I know that you've been active in all sorts of leadership roles in that industry, trade and travel associations, and you've been involved with ASATA, ASATA, and you're the past chairman of the Western Cape region. And in fact, you've even invited me to one or two of the events. So, Leon, first, before you even get into what you're doing and how your business is going and staffing, etc., tell us about you, about the man, Leon Singer.
Okay, thank you for that very kind introduction. Are you hearing me, Terry? Am I coming across clearly?
Perfect, perfect. Go ahead.
Excellent. So I started I grew up in Bantry Bay. Started off, slight correction, I started off at Weitzman School and then went on to Herstler. My junior school was at Weitzman, then on
Ah, yeah,
to
sorry. Yeah, sorry.
Herstler School. And when I finished school, I decided I didn't want to do any military training. Not that I just not only that I didn't feel like going through the process. I didn't agree with what was happening, and I didn't want to be conscripted. But I didn't have very much of a choice. So, but before that, I went to UCT and I did a degree in Bachelor of Social Science, as you mentioned. And then I was very privileged to be selected to do a postgraduate in, as you mentioned, in human resources. Of course, that was at Fitz Business Administration. Of course, human resources, I don't have to tell you, and labor law has changed completely since I was there. So I can't say that I'm any sort of expert in that field, other than what I picked up through practical knowledge. So after I finished at Fitz Business School, I was conscripted into the Air Force. I felt a little bit lucky that I was going to the Air Force and not to the training to the Army. And I spent 2 years in Pretoria. In those days, it was quite easy to commute from Pretoria to Johannesburg. So I actually, after I finished my basic training, I spent most of my time in staying in Johannesburg and used to go through. It was only a 45-minute drive in those days. Of course, today it's probably around 2 hours in peak times. That wouldn't be possible. So what can I say? I was in the Air Force because I was a postgraduate. I had a postgraduate degree. I became first a second lieutenant, and after about a year, I was a full lieutenant. So I had people saluting me, and I obviously saluted back. And but I must say that I can't say that those were the two most productive years of my life. I had an office of four clocks, and there wasn't enough to keep me busy for an hour a day, and I had to give them work to do as well. So I can't say that was the most productive time of my life, but I did have fun. It was fun. I even once being in the Air Force, being at Air Force headquarters, I once got a ride on an empty plane coming to fetch the then Prime Minister P.W. Botha to Cape Town, just for a little break in Cape Town. So there were some fun aspects of that as well.
Yeah, look, a lot of us at the time, just to jump in over there, a lot of us at the time were then forced. A lot of us tried to go to university first to see if we could duck the army. It didn't happen. I landed up doing exactly the same thing. And also at Voortrekkerhoogte in Pretoria, I eventually managed to become a law officer in Windhoek. And I thought, in fact, my time in Windhoek was incredibly productive. I, with friends, bought a Basically, we bought a Land Rover and we traveled the country. We had no work to do whatsoever. So yes, I mean, you did have some fun, I'm sure, and it didn't do you any damage. I'm sure about that as well. Sorry, I intervened there.
No, it didn't do me any damage. One of the things that I did enjoy, because I had a background with that in human resources, I was involved in the selection of Air Force pilots. And I did a bit of, so I did a little bit of research as well for the Air Force. That was actually the stimulating part of it, where they had to, the Air Force at that time, and I'm going back probably 40 years probably, I'm going back. At that time, it cost R1 million to train an Air Force pilot. Today, it's obviously millions, much, many millions. But what was happening, once the pilots qualified, they left the Air Force and they went to earn more lucrative money at the, at South African Airways or other airlines. So the question was, why do people, what is the profile of a person that actually stays in the Air Force and is not motivated by earning extra money? And what is the profile of someone who just wants to get his pilot's license, commercial license, and then join an airline? And what interests me, what the facts, so I interviewed numerous pilots, and an interesting fact came out that it was mainly Afrikaans-speaking pilots who came from small towns, not those who came from big cities. That was the only conclusion that they came to. Whether the Air Force uses information in future selections, I don't know.
Well, look, let me just hop in over there. And a thought comes to mind, and I don't know if you recall a colleague of ours at school, Robert Shapiro, who was from Oranjezicht in Cape Town, who managed, he had a dream right through school. And I remember speaking to him about it. He had a dream that he wanted to be a pilot, and he had difficulties and couldn't go to pilot school and all sorts of exercises. He managed to get into the Air Force. And then managed somehow, despite some difficulties that he had, to go on the pilot training and eventually landed up as a commercial pilot right into his, I think it was early 60s. And unfortunately, he passed away well, not even a decade ago. He wrote a wonderful book. I think it's called Secrets from the Cockpit, which his wife managed to finish. She found the manuscript of the book when he passed away, and she finished the book, and it is on sale. So interesting. I don't know if you recall Robert Shapiro.
Recording very well. I've read his book. I met him several times during his career. In fact, we were actually on the same flight sitting together when he was going up for his interview at the Air Force. And one day, I think it was, I was walking up the steps in up the aircraft steps in Durban, and there he was grinning from ear to ear because he saw me from the cockpit coming up the stairs, and he came out to greet me. So I do remember him very, very well. He worked after the Air Force. He worked for he worked for SAA, and then moved to the US and worked actually for a Japanese airline in the US. So yes, I do remember him very, very well.
In fact, I remember him, and I had bumped into him about 20 years after school, saying that he was the only Jewish pilot in the, I can't remember the airline that he was working. I think it was Cathay that he was working for. He was the only Jewish pilot at the time, and had some amazing stories, which, if anyone's interested, the book is there, Secrets of the Cockpit, or to something to that degree. We're going to break off for 1 minute and have a quick ad break. We need to pay the bills.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Thank you. You're back with Michael Bagram. And remember, it's every Tuesday evening between 6 and 7. We have a lot of fun on the program. We introduce you to a guest, and the guest then introduces himself and gives a bit of a background. It's a wonderful idea to keep everyone knowing who we are, what we do, and where we're going. Leon, just before we knocked off for the advert, Leon Singer was telling us a little bit about his history in the Air Force in the military at the time, and we were speaking about Robert Shapiro. And of course, I do want you to comment a little bit on the early days of your father's business, which you joined eventually and became the Singer Group, and that's Embassy Travel, because Embassy Travel has been my travel agency for these past 40 years at least, if not longer, actually, past 50 years. And in fact, now while I'm in Parliament, you also have the parliamentary contract. I know that you're giving it up at the end of this year, but you have that contract, and I've had the pleasure, absolute pleasure, of dealing with your ladies working there at the group and doing the most amazing stuff. I change my ideas, my plights, every day I change it, and they are there 24/7, able to do whatever's necessary. Tell us a little bit about that, the early days of Embassy Travel.
Okay, I just want to take one step back before I get to Embassy Travel, if I may.
Yes, of course.
That I started doing on my own was I started a Thai business. And I don't know if you remember, many moons ago, maybe 30, 40 years ago, it was fashionable for young kids, teenagers, to wear these narrow ties. I don't know if you remember
I do remember that, yeah. The ducktails used to wear it as well.
they used to wear it, so hanging loose around their neck. And what I used to do is I used to screen the name of music groups and artists like Bob Marley and everything on the tie. And I used to sell them both to record shops in those days when they had record shops and to clothing shops. And I carried on doing that simultaneously while my dad bought a travel agency. My dad was a chartered accountant and bought a travel agency sideline, and it was all quite new, and I joined as well while I was doing my prior business. And one of the most interesting things that we used to do at Embassy Travel, we used to have a program called Kibbutz Adventure, where we used to send youngsters over as volunteers to work on the kibbutzim in Israel. And there were more Gentile people going than there were Jewish people going to work. So we became, and my late mom, Esther, was a person who ran this kibbutz adventure program. Every person had to be screened to see if they were fine to go, not going to cause any problems. And then there was communication with the kibbutz office in Tel Aviv. And eventually they went, and some of them spent many years and over the years came back to visit and tell us of the experience, et cetera, et cetera. So, yes, I've played.
Can I stop you there? Because I was one of those kids that went
Would
on
you?
the kibbutz, yeah, that went on one of those kibbutz adventures. And in fact, I was joined by two other friends. It was absolutely wonderful and cost next to nothing, I must tell you. But yeah, I can smile and look back on that. But can I just stop you while you're here? Because you said you started selling your ties, and I think I might have bought one because I don't know if you remember in Sea Point in those early days, there was a business there called the Record Library that
Very
was
well.
run by Danny Siddis and Jacobson. I can't remember his first name.
Roy Jacobson.
Jacobson's gone, that's Roy Jacobson, you're quite right. He's gone to
Great.
live in Sydney. But Danny Siddis is still in Cape Town, and I do see him from time to time. And I had bought one of those ties from him. I'm sure it was one of yours. I can't say for certainty, but I remember getting a ducktail tie.
It definitely was because Roy is still, I'm still very, very friendly with Roy. We keep in touch, and it definitely was one of the ties that they stopped there that you must have bought. Also,
Small world.
you outsourced the CMT to a factory.
You did it yourself.
No, I bought the
Oh,
material.
okay. Oh, okay.
And the factory made it up for me. And then I used to go, I walked the streets of Johannesburg, Durban, and Cape Town, just getting it into the market. And it did very, very well. And then the fashion eventually just sort of faded. And I carried on doing other things like in the travel agency.
Okay, so then you joined the travel agency Embassy Travel. It still holds the same name today.
Yeah, correct.
And you joined them and you worked there for a while before you actually formed the Singer Group.
Yes, so when my younger brother Brian came into the business, we both started off. We had an opportunity to buy into the Garden Centre Holiday Apartments, which is above the Garden Shopping Centre. From those of you not from Cape Town, and we are still involved in that business today. It's a very successful business. Did that a few years later, an opportunity came about to purchase the Dolphin Beach Hotel. So we didn't have much money there, so we joined with a public company, and we bought it on a 50-50 basis. And then the public company changed direction, and it wasn't really their core business, and they asked would they like to buy us out, which we did. So we then, we then own the whole of Dolphin Beach Hotel, which is in Blouberg, and from that evolved a restaurant called, which is now called Blowfish Restaurant, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard of, and that's also going strong. We then moved on to the development side of hotels, and we were approached by Rabi, who, if you property group, which I'm sure everybody knows, were instrumental in the development of Century City, and they were building they built an apartment block, and they asked us would they would like to have a hotel component in it, and we said great, and we purchased 23 rooms in the Island Club, and that's still going today. And a few years later, they developed the Coliseum in Century City, and they were developing apartments on the fourth and the fifth floor. And we approached them and said, well, why can't we do this like Island Club and turn it into a hotel? So all the plans were changed, and instead of building apartments, we built the Coliseum Hotel, which is very well known today.
Just to
Besides,
stop you, can I stop you there? Just look at the Blowfish restaurant. It specializes in obviously in seafood, sushi, that sort of thing, and it's become extremely popular with tourists in Cape Town. And you've kept it reasonable. You haven't gone out of your depth in terms of these massive prices that you would pay at some of these sushi restaurants and fish restaurants in Cape Town. How have you managed that? Because also what I have noticed, and I wanted you to talk about it, you've been creating employment in Cape Town year on year. You keep growing and you keep creating employment. And it's obviously not so easy in this day and age, but I know you've been doing that now for almost 30 years. Tell us a bit about that.
yes, absolutely. We have we employ approximately 360 people in our group. That ranges from security guards to cleaners to receptionists to middle management to general managers of the various properties. And I used to do most of the recruiting myself in the old days, but now we've handed those over to the general managers to do. Maintenance people as well. We employ and accounting staff and everything that goes into running a business. So yes, we have created a lot. We have created a lot of appointments in the Western Cape.
And in fact, I know that industries such as restaurants, and you've got more than just the Blowfish, you've got it at your hotels. I can't remember the names of the different restaurants, but that's very labor intensive and often, well, let me say, it can create disputes between management and staff. I know I've been involved as one of your labor lawyers. But you've managed to keep those disputes to a minimum. It's been a success story all around. You want to
No,
comment on that?
yeah, I think what we've always had the view that we wanted to share. If we're doing well, we wanted to share with our staff. So we won't have any union taking us to the labor court because we pay above the minimum, well above the minimum wage. There's no argument that you know people are being underpaid or anything. Obviously, we'd like to pay more and more, but I mean that's not always affordable. But
Well, in fact, if I can stop you there, and I know you don't like to boast, but you're in fact paying double the minimum wage from in most cases.
That's possible. I didn't actually think of
Yeah, I've had a look.
So we like to reward our staff. We like to give them benefits. We want because once you have a happy workforce, you're going to have a happy customer. They're going to pass it on. If someone's unhappy, depressed, all the time, worrying about how they're going to put food on the table that evening, they're not going to come across well to a guest. So we
Absolutely.
looking after our staff.
So, if I can go backwards a little bit, in terms of you, I mean, it became, I mean, from a travel agency to buying apartments in the Garden Centre to eventually running a hotel, the business has changed a few directions, and you've never dropped the one direction in favour of another. You've just almost grown each direction further and further, like the tentacles.
Yeah, correct. We have tried to we strive to do that, yes.
And just in terms of the difficulty of running, I mean, I know because I deal with a lot of restaurants in my own career, that's an incredibly difficult business to run. Do you find it more labor intensive and more time intensive than, for instance, running a hotel maybe or a travel agency?
Yes, it is. You see, typically the profile of a restaurant worker, like a waiter, is not long term. They're normally people who're filling in time. They're studying part time, then they finish studying, then they travel overseas. So that's our biggest turnover of staff are waiters because that's just the very nature of the band, and what they want to do, and how they want to progress.
Okay. Now, you and your siblings have been intimately involved in every single sphere of the business, and it's working. Quite a remarkable story, that in itself.
Yes, it is. My sister, I've mentioned my brother Brian. My sister Jill was an attorney for many, many years, as you know, for a major law firm partner.
Yeah.
About 10 years ago, she didn't. She's never completely given up law, but about 10 years ago, she joined us, and she plays a very, very important role in our business as well. Not only from a legal point of view, from other aspects as well.
She was a very accomplished commercial lawyer, and I suppose that's helped with the thought processes of this business growing exponentially.
Absolutely. I just wanted to add to one other another property. We don't own it, but we manage it, and that's you are familiar with it. It's Montague Springs, and
Yeah.
we Montague Springs is a collection of about 96 different types of units, all individually owned. We don't own it. We report to a management committee. But we do run the resort as well. And then the other aspect for the other business I wanted to mention is the Vaca Santos, which we got into about 8 9 years ago, which is a camping site in Mossel Bay with together with chalets. So that's
Yeah,
really.
let me just before you go into Mossel Bay, I want to talk a little bit about Montague Springs. That was at one stage owned by Lipschitz, who also was a client of mine, and I remember introducing you to Lipschitz, and he then got his claws into you, and you managed to buy it at the time. You helped him out, quite frankly, and it was a good purchase, I think.
Well, it wasn't actually a purchase, it was actually taking over of the management contract. Although we personally bought our own units as well, but it's mainly owned by outside people, individual people, not outside people, individual people. And we manage it, and it's a very popular destination for Capetonians.
Well, yes, in fact, that's why I wanted to talk a little bit about it because I'd like to ride a Harley-Davidson, and Montague Springs happens to be a destination of choice, and there's a big rally there annually. I know that the club I belong to has now given up their rally, but it's been taken over by another group. And you've been so kind as to host me each year at Montague Springs. I hope we didn't destroy the place each year, but I know it was very noisy, but I don't know if you were ever there during that rally, the motorbike Harley Davidson motorbike rally.
I've never been there during the time, but primarily been able to get in. Always full for the rally.
Yeah, it gets closed off, and no outsiders can come in. It gets
Great.
closed off for a large degree, but I know the town loves it, Montague loves it, because they bring an enormous amount of money that week of the rally into the little town. And in fact, you were the epicenter of those rallies.
Absolutely, and not only for the rally, but generally, we quite full most weekends. Not so busy during the week, and that is the major boost to the economy of Montague.
And I also know that those motorbike rallies always put aside a certain amount of money. It's about 15% of their income towards a charity in Montague. And again, it's been a big boon to that little city. Also, you through Montague Springs created a hell of a lot of jobs and also very happy people. I know that whenever I walked into the office during those rallies, everyone would say, "Oh no, what are you doing here? Who's done wrong?" I
Yeah,
became the Grinch, the Christmas Grinch.
that's quite right. Yes, and but generally, we our staff, as we mentioned earlier, are happy and content. There was a union we started, but most of them have left the union, and they just preferred to negotiate directly with us.
Okay, we're going to come off air for 1 minute and then come back on. They're going to have an advert.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Thank you. Thank you very much for being on air with us. We always enjoy the Tuesday evening between 6 and 7. It's Michael Bagram. And we're talking about law and life. I often talk about the employment of people. I have wonderful guests. And tonight I've had Leon Steven Singer, who's been a friend of mine for many years, and someone who has lived through an incredibly fantastic business career, someone who is the same age as me, but done so much. And he's been telling us a little bit about his history, his personal history, and the history of the Singer Group, which is the family group that he's definitely a key man in that family group. And he's talking about some of the hotels, some of the restaurants, and some of the basic stuff that this business does. We left off just, Leon, just before we left off, it was we were talking about Montague Springs, which is a hot springs resort about an hour out of Cape Town. But I know that you've also ventured into another interesting call it a caravan park or what, I don't know what you call it, but in Mossel Bay, very close to the Benaiah Keva camp in Mossel Bay. And you've done wonderful things there. I know because I keep in touch with the political representatives, the mayor of Mossel Bay, who speaks so highly of what you're doing and how you're improving the land and the tourist attraction. Tell us a bit about that.
Okay, so the history of it is that my brother Brian's family used to camp there. Well, still do camp there, and they've been camping there for many, many years. And when Brian joined the family, he started camping there and started enjoying camping. By the way, I don't like camping too much, so
Okay.
I don't really go there that often to camp. The municipality was running the campsite. It's got over 300 campsites, and it's got about 44 chalets. And they put it out to tender because they didn't want to run it. They wanted to privatize it. They didn't want to run it anymore. So they put it out for a 30-year lease. And we were successful in the tender, and we got the property for, we've got the property, well, it's not 30 years anymore. There was an interruption during COVID where they extended the contract, but we do most of the bulk of the business is done in December, January, and Easter, but otherwise it's not very, very busy during the year. But it's a tremendous, tremendous boost to the Mossel Bay economy, especially during those 6 weeks in December, January, when all the campers come. And it's return business that people want the same site, camping sites, we're doing what we can to improve it. We've redone the ablution blocks. We've really made it, and we'll continue to make it into a very much more comfortable camping experience.
Okay, now the representative, the political representative in the provincial parliament for Mossel Bay, Jaco Lont, is I think someone you might have spoken to, but they keep giving me feedback on how fantastic the work that you've done there. You've smartened it up, you've cleaned it up, you've put in facilities that they never had. And in fact, they maintain that that's bringing a lot of people into Mossel Bay that would never have come before. Can you explain that to me? It's a world-class institution there now.
Well, that's very generous to say it's world class. I wouldn't quite put it in that category, but it was very, before we took over, it was very, very run down. The ablution blocks were not very pleasant places to go to. And we actually rebuilt all of them, and that made a huge difference to the campsite, because that's sort of the main thing that people look for in quality of a campsite. I mean, a piece of ground that you rent with electricity, and all your electrical parts of your caravan are plugged into this. But the ablution blocks are something that make a campsite good and comfortable and pleasant to be in. And we have a number of staff. We have a maintenance people there. We have we've got it continuously. It's a very long, it's about 3 kilometers long. It's not wide, it's narrow. And so we are continually cutting the cutting of grass is sort of a continuous thing that happens on a daily basis. They start on the one side and they end on the other side. Sometimes a little bit difficult to manage everything from Cape Town, but we've got a very good general manager there in place, and I still handle the admin from my office in Cape Town, more on the financial side, and it seems to work. It works very well, and it's very, very popular.
Well, in fact, it is working exceptionally well. I know you don't like to call it world class, but as a camping site, it probably is. I mean, obviously, you can't compare it to a hotel, but and you're not a person that likes camping, but people are reporting that. But one thing I do hear from the municipality is that they're very chuffed with the fact that you're employing more and more people there, and that it's run spick and span. It's no longer an eyesore, and in fact, people are writing great reviews about it, and the municipality likes to take a lot of the COVID for that. You want to comment on that?
Yes, we are employing more people, not all directly. Some of the people are for our security, we outsource, but it's still providing employment for
Absolutely, yeah.
not by us. Security is actually a very, very important aspect for Montague Springs, because there's access from the beach, there's access from the road, and there is crime in the area. There's no question about that. But we've
Can I put
managed.
you on hold? Can I put you on hold 1 minute? We're gonna go for an ad break. We're gonna pay the bills again.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Thank you. Back with Michael Bagram and Leon Singer. We were talking about the Singer Group and some of their developments around the country. And in particular, we're now looking at Mossel Bay and the fact that they are grown from strength to strength, and they're employing people, very happy people. Sometimes they outsource, but I know the municipality in Mossel Bay, and I was there recently. I stayed at a guest house, in fact, not at the camping area, but they all knew about the success of the camping area itself in Mossel Bay. I just wanted to move on to something quite different, and that is the tourism industry in South Africa. Now, we are pushing, it's become one of our major industries, and it's a massive job creation, especially in the Western Cape. I know in KwaZulu-Natal they're pushing hard for it. And in fact, even the Northern Cape is starting to build up on its tourism industry. And we've got Minister Patricia de Lille, although she's embroiled in some sort of public spat at the moment. She's got some great plans. Can you tell us about your expectation and your hopes for the tourism industry?
Sure. Firstly, I just want to mention that our family have always been very, very involved in the tourism associations. My late dad, Barney, was the president, the national president of ASATA. This is all over and above his activities in the Zionist world. And my sister-in-law, Leanne Singer, Brian's wife, is currently the chairperson of FedHars in the Western Cape. So we try to give back to the industry. And but to answer your question, I've got great faith that Cape Town is growing and growing from a tourism point of view. I understand that for every eight tourists, one, I don't know if I've got my numbers right, but for every eight tourists, one job is created
That's correct. That's absolutely correct.
in the Western
Sorry,
Cape.
I interrupted you, but yes, that is absolutely correct. And in fact, they're thinking not only is one job created, but it boosts a whole other. Once a tourist comes in, it's something that spreads into every single other industry in the town, the city. People rent cars, people visit restaurants, they buy paraphernalia. It touches every single business. And I know your family has been involved very heavily in the tourism industry. And I also know that you personally have sat on committees for years. Not just of ASATA, there was another one, Conrad had a strange name. What was that called? Skull or something.
Got that.
That Skal, Skull.
Oh, also a tourism body, but it's more of a friendship club, doing business amongst friends and everything like that. It's not, it's a
Okay.
little bit different than to what ASATA does and UFTA, which is the world body. But I used to be very, very involved in managing of Shirt Travel, Sartac, and now developed into XL Travel. In fact, I've come back from these where I was on a conference, and there's going to be tremendous changes from what I learned. It was very eye-opening and a very good learning experience at Chat E and AI and how that's going to affect travelers and make the life of travelers a lot easier. But to answer your question, there's a tremendous boost to the economy, especially Cape, of tourists coming in.
Now, I also have been watching very carefully what's happening with Home Affairs and the ability to get visas online and for preferred travel. Minister Leon Schreiber is pulling out every stop that he can to try and bring as many tourists in. Are you starting to see this?
Absolutely, he's doing an excellent job. It's so easy. You know, before, apparently in China, there were only two places you could apply for a South African visa. So someone, you'd have to travel halfway around the country just to get your visa. Now things are being able to be done online, and it's making the process for the traveler a lot easier. So hats off to Minister Schreiber. He's doing an outstanding job. And may it continue in this way. And I've got so much faith in the future of West Cape tourism, not just Cape Town, but the whole of the Western Cape.
Well, thank you. We're running out of time, and it's up to me now I don't know where to find words to thank you for sort of spending time with us this evening, sharing some of the insight into your business, and to Leon Steven Singer, the man. I know that you've just come back from a wonderful holiday and a working holiday, and thank you for sparing the evening with us. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. It's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you very much for having me as your guest. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Cheerio. Thank you, everyone.